and we need to start partitioning those into other subcomponents. In the document, we have put in sort of a preliminary look of what the breakdown is for all of those ABCs. We will, over the next couple of weeks, be looking at what took place in fishing year 2011 and evaluating whether we need to change the distribution, whether we need to change adjustments for management uncertainty, et cetera. So the numbers that are in there could move around a little bit as we make those evaluations and work with the committee to decide how to change those. There are some important ones to highlight in there. I think the first is the allocation of yellowtail flounder to the scallop fishery. There are some numbers, there are some options in the document for how to do that. One of them is just a fixed option where you give the scallop fishery 8% of the ABC, so we can calculate that number. But another option is based on an estimate of the catch that the scallop fishery is expected to harvest in the future year, and the scallop PDT and the groundfish PDT are working on developing those numbers. So, in a nutshell, all of the numbers that are currently in the table should be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt. The ABCs are accurate, but the division into the other subcomponents may change a little bit. The committee has a fairly well-developed plan, or at least the start of a well-developed plan, to try and provide some closed area access in order to help mitigate some of the low ACLs. We will talk about that more, and I'll give you a little more detail. There are some adjustments to accountability measure timing that are proposed, as well as some changes to accountability measures for some of the non-allocated stocks like ocean pout, windowpane flounder, and southern New England mid-Atlantic winter flounder. Those are options that were considered in our last framework document but not adopted by the council. They're being reconsidered again in this action. And then the not-so-well-developed ones. I think the first one is perhaps one of the most difficult ones that we're wrestling with and perhaps one of the most important undeveloped measures that we're working with. And that is trying to figure out what is the appropriate level of coverage for at-sea monitoring and to address some of the at-sea monitoring issues. The PDT, in particular, our Science Center economist, has spent a lot of time trying to identify whether we have evidence that behavior on unobserved trips is different than behavior on observed trips. And after a lot of work, I think the conclusion is, yes, it is. The behavior is different. We do find statistically significant differences between observed and unobserved trips in the metrics that we looked at, such as total catched, total groundfish kept, total cod kept. However, statistically significant doesn't necessarily mean large differences. And in fact, the analysis seems to show that at the, I forget if it's the median or the mean, the differences are actually relatively small. Now, the problem that we have with this analysis is this tells us what the differences are in things that we can measure. It doesn't tell us what the differences are in things we can't measure on observed and unobserved trips. And the one, of course, we're interested in the most is discards. And so we're having a great deal of difficulty trying to turn this information into useful information on determining what the right level of at-sea monitoring coverage is. We had hoped on the PDT that we would be farther along with this issue than we are now. We have another committee meeting scheduled for October 11th, and we realize that that's really the chance for us to put something in front of the committee that they have to provide some feedback on so we can analyze something and bring it back at the November council meeting. And the key issue here is trying to reconcile and wrestle with the difference between the precision and accuracy of the discard estimates. Precision, if you look at fishing year 2010 and you look at the stocks that were caught by the sector overall, and I mean so all the Gulf of Maine cod caught by sectors, for example, precision was pretty good. In fact, precision was below the 30% CV standard. And so if you look at that, you might argue, well, we had too much observer coverage. But that doesn't really address the accuracy part, and that's the part where we're having trouble wrestling with. We're hoping to be able to bring that to some sort of conclusion. Quite honestly, we've found that a lot of these other observer programs around the country haven't had any better luck than we have. If you look at a lot of the programs that have 100% observer coverage, many of them have not really defined why they have 100% observer coverage. And many of them have 100% observer coverage not to monitor quotas, but because they're concerned about monitoring what I would call the rare calamitous event, okay? You know, catching a stellar sea lion or something like that, or slamming into a whole bunch of salmon. So they're really not looking at the 100% observer coverage as a quota monitoring tool. Quite often they're looking at it for identifying these rare event tools. So this is perhaps, I think, and I spent a little bit more time on this one than I will on some of the others because I think of its importance. And I think the PDT, of course, is concerned because when we start talking about some of the low quota levels that may be in place next year, there's at least the potential that this will increase the incentive for discarding behavior on unobserved trips. And so it's important that we feel that we have something in mind that may try and help us detect if that goes on and perhaps prevent that from going on. Of course, at the same time, you have to balance that with cost. And as we all know, the observer program is expensive no matter who's paying for it. And so that's, you know, those are the three things that we're wrestling with: accuracy, precision, and cost. We have another 1 a.m. issue that is outstanding yet, and that is for Southern New England Mid-Atlantic windowpane flounder. Most of that stock is not caught by the groundfish fishery. Most of it is caught by other fisheries. Our only AM right at present is on the groundfish fishery, and so we're wrestling with how to deal with some of the other fisheries. This action considers establishing a sub-ACL for the scallop fishery for Southern New England Mid-Atlantic windowpane flounder, but we still have a lot that's caught in other fisheries like the fluke fishery, the squid fishery, some of the other mid-Atlantic fisheries. One of the ideas we had originally was to consider sub-ACLs for those fisheries of windowpane flounder, which would, I think, be the first time perhaps that we've established a sub-ACL for a non-New England Fishery Management Council fishery. Well, when we looked at that, we have a lot of concerns about our ability to accurately assign the catch to a particular FMP on a particular trip, because quite often boats are fishing under multiple FMPs on a particular trip. So an idea we have is that perhaps we can have the AM apply to particular gears, and we're still trying to put together some analyses that will help us evaluate whether that program will work. And the committee has already been briefed on it, and they said, okay, you know, we'll consider it when we see the analysis, which we hope to bring forward in October. There's a possibility that with the changes in the Gulf of Maine haddock and Gulf of Maine cod ACLs that we may need recreational measures. We're working with the center, and we meet with the recreational advisory panel next week to discuss this issue. We actually don't know for sure that we need to change the measures, but we should know by next week, and we'll bring forward the RAP suggestions to the committee in October. Today we're going to bring forward a couple motions. I'm going to give you a quick overview of the motions now, and we can answer more detailed questions later as the motions come up, if you have them. There's sort of a housekeeping motion on scallop allocations, scallop fishery allocations of Georges Bank yellowtail flounder. Over the course of the summer, we developed several options. It turns out that two approaches for calculating gave almost identical results, so one of the motions essentially combines those into one. With at-sea monitoring, we were considering since last spring the idea of perhaps allocating additional ACE to sectors, and they would somehow use that ACE to help defray funding costs. But we've been advised that the alternative that was being developed by the committee cannot be implemented in a framework because it revises the way allocations are done. And so the committee is suggesting taking that out of the framework and moving it to considered and rejected. The document considers revising minimum sizes. There's been an option in the document for some time that would require full retention and would have no minimum size limits for groundfish. There's a suggestion from the committee that rather than completely eliminate minimum sizes, to modify the minimum size limits to a small value. Some of them you'll look at and you'll think are shockingly small, perhaps. And I wanted to explain a little bit the rationale so that you understand why they're so small. Dr. Hogan on our staff put together a number of charts where she looked at the observer coverage, and basically she plotted the length frequency of the observer coverage, length frequency of the discards of each species. She put together probably half a dozen or a dozen charts similar to the one you see on the screen. And so we went through at the committee's direction, and basically we picked the spot We picked the spot, you know, somewhere over here for all of these charts where it looks like if the minimum size was along here, you'd remove all of these regulatory discards and you would convert them to landings. But you wouldn't completely eliminate the idea of a minimum size. The committee views this as sort of a midpoint between the approach of completely getting rid of minimum sizes and having some reduction in minimum sizes from where they are now. And the committee's idea is that, you know, as things go forward, it's entirely possible that they may modify these somewhat a little bit as we go forward. So this is an additional option, not a replacement option. I think the one that motion that may attract the most discussion today, and I'll spend a little bit of time on, is a motion that attempts to provide some access to groundfish fishermen to the closed areas. In response to the expected low ACLs for next year, in late July, early August, some interest arose to try and craft an alternative that would allow groundfish fishermen into the closed areas in order to help them access things like pollock, redfish, perhaps species and other fishery management plans, in order to help bring more fish across the dock, basically. So the committee at its August meeting passed a motion which would allow access to many groundfish closed areas, I guess that's more accurately said, all of the year-round groundfish closed areas. Closed Area 1 and 2, the original motion in August was that it was seasonal and would be for specific selective gears like the separator trawl and longline gear. The Lightship closed area, Western Gulf of Maine, and Cash's Ledge closed area, the idea was that they would be year-round and they would be accessible to all groundfish gears. It's important to note that this committee motion would have applied to the habitat closures, which are often inside the groundfish closures, so it would have modified access to the habitat closed areas. So this is sort of a chart, pretty good, but showing what areas would be allowed access in closed area 1 and closed area 2. That's the crosshatch area. And out here in the Western Gulf of Maine, this area access would not have been allowed. It's a very small block you can't really see here where access would not have been allowed on caches. But basically in the other areas, access would have been allowed year-round. This is the original committee motion. After the committee motion, there was some staff-to-staff discussions between our staff and the regional office and the Science Center staff. And there's some issues here that because this motion proposed altering habitat areas, it's believed that to accomplish this would require a full amendment and an EIS, which would not be completed in time to have any real benefit for fishing year 2013. It also would very probably interfere with the progress on the omnibus habitat amendment. So based on this, the alternative that came out of staff was to allow sectors to request relatively narrowly defined access to the closed areas. That would require a change in the framework document in the exemptions that sectors can request. And then the sectors would make a request and would incorporate it into their sector operations plans. A lot of little details here. You know, ops plans were supposed to be submitted on September 1st, so, you know, sectors would have to have an additional opportunity. Their EAs would have to analyze the impact, so that would have to be done. But this was the idea that came forward out of staff's. The committee basically adopted the idea. I will point out one or two changes that the committee made. The original suggestion from the staff mirrored the Groundfish Committee motion as much as possible, with the exception that we blocked out the habitat areas. And so the original motion from the idea from the staff was that these crosshatch areas would be eligible for sectors to request access. This line here was because it was embedded in the committee motion. There was already an access program up here in the northern corner of Closed Area 2, the Eastern Georges Bank Haddock SAP. The PDT, you'll see a little box, green box here out in Cash's Ledge. This is an area on Fippany's Ledge, which is under consideration as a habitat management area in the Omnibus Habitat Amendment. So our idea was that we shouldn't open that up until we know whether Habitat Amendment is actually going to adopt it as a habitat management area or not. So these are the areas. The PDT's concept also brought forward the idea that in Closed Area 1 and Closed Area 2, this would be seasonal access, and that it would only be available to selective gears. Part of the rationale for requiring selective gears in these two areas, particularly in Closed Area 2, but in these areas, is because the idea is to target healthy stocks and not to pick up our catch of unhealthy stocks. And the concern, of course, particularly in Closed Area 2, is that if you go in here with a regular trawl, you're going to catch yellowtail flounder, which we don't have a lot of lot to catch up. Some of the experiments that scallopers are doing are suggesting, for example, that the yellowtail flounder may move in here in the September, October, August time frame. And so the concern that we had was that the catches would sort of defeat our purpose, which would be to try and catch haddock without catching these things. The committee has modified the motion somewhat, and the measure as indicated in the framework document reflects the committee modifications. The main modifications are the committee included these areas here and here as eligible for access by sectors. So the only area in Closed Area 2 that would not be open is the HAPC, which should be this block, green block here. And the other part that the committee took out was this idea of using selective gears in the areas. The feeling here and the rationale for the committee is that, you know, sectors have hard quotas. If they manage their hard quotas, you know, we don't really care where they catch it. And presumably it's to the sector's benefit to not catch yellowtail flounder in this area, so they'll focus on targeting haddock out in these areas. So that's basically what will be in the committee motion. That's what's written into the framework document. And that's pretty much covers my quick overview of the framework. I can answer any general questions now, but if there's questions on a specific measure, it might be easier to answer them when the measures come up.